Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to hear your good morning, and thank you for being here. My name is Kabir, and I know many of you. Actually, as I look out, I see a whole family of friends, some from the past and some for the future, but all in the moment. And what binds us together as friends is something that's very significant. We're all on the same journey, perhaps in different ways. Our topic today is about the ego. There's at least one of us in here that has that, and I can confess. And in fact, it's about, is the ego our friend, or is it actually a foe? And I have some stories to tell about that, you know, that even on the spiritual path after years and years, one might think that the ego is just about gone or completely demolished or destroyed or dissolved. And I can attest to the fact that it does take a long time to be able to really dissolve that ego. In fact, when I first met my wife, Bajna, in Italy, I had been on the path for a number of years, and she was fairly new. And she assumed that she was meeting somebody without an ego. Poor thing. That thought did not last too long, actually. Somehow she married me anyway, but it was a very wonderful time where we started to learn, okay, we do have those egos, and we can work together to resolve that and to work with that to lift it in the way that it's necessary. On the spiritual path, actually, it doesn't necessarily mean that the ego is not apparent or not at all present in almost everything. In fact, the spiritual path sort of pushes it out a little bit sometimes, so that, in fact, it's a blessing, so that we can work on it. One time, I was a family minister at Ananda Village, and there were, at that time, about 145 children living at the village. I was responsible for the family ministry, and I was organizing an Easter morning service, and guess who was going to give it? No, not me, Swami. Swami, a very unusual moment where Swami was going to speak to all these children and their families. Everybody wanted to come. It was an Easter morning service before the regular service, but everybody in the community was coming to this, and our temple was absolutely packed, jam-packed. There wasn't room for anybody. They were standing around the sides. And I was sitting next to Swami down there. I had organized, make sure the choir was there and the songs and the different prayers and so forth, and everything was ready. He was going to give the talk. So things were moving on. The choir had just done its thing, its singing, and I was sitting next to him, and he was just about to get up, and he leaned over to me and said, "You do it." A true nightmare. My life flashed before my eyes, and I thought, this must be the end. In fact, it was a very interesting moment in my life, because in every moment on the spiritual path, we have options. We have choices that we can make. Are we going to respond out of the ego, which says, oh, what about me? What are people going to think about me? What am I going to say? Am I going to be a fool? Well, the answer to that would be yes. And or do I surrender into whatever's happening, whatever needs to happen, because it doesn't really matter. I just want to find the right attitude. I'm not sure I found that one immediately, but somehow out of my mouth, in about half a second, I just said, okay. He says, you do it. I had no preparation for a talk, so I had to stand up in front of this wonderful audience, all expecting Swami. We'd advertised, and everybody was there to hear Swami. And I had to say, I'm not Swami, sorry, but I'll be speaking with you today. And I had no idea what to say, but somehow, by just surrendering to that moment, something came out. I didn't hear anybody, or I didn't see anybody leaving or people groaning. Something must have happened. Because when we can find that right attitude, it's setting aside the thoughts of the ego, setting aside ourselves, and saying, okay, I can do this. It doesn't even matter what happens. Yes, it's okay to be a fool, but I'll try my best. Now, that ego is in a journey in itself. It's a journey that can take a long time, take lifetimes. But what is that ego that we're having to work with? Is it really us? Well, you know, there are several definitions of an ego. One person said, an egotist is someone who has the audacity to be thinking about himself all the time instead of thinking about me. But, okay, that's one understanding. Another one, you know, Winston Churchill was known for having a tremendous ego. And in fact, it was a real asset because that kind of power of ego and confidence in himself was very necessary in the war. But he was a little bit embarrassed by it sometimes. And so one time he wanted to say something that showed some sense of humility. So he got up and said, "Well, my friends, I think of us all, including myself, as worms. But I actually think of myself as a glowworm." So something a little bit special. The ego still had to come through. But it still has its place in the evolution of our consciousness. The ego can actually be a tremendous friend along the way. Yes, it can be a foe, because if our goal is to find, to be liberated, to be free in God, to be able to feel that presence of God all the time, it means letting go of that thought of I, me, mine, all those desires that we have that seem to be blocking our understanding, our feeling, our perception of God in us and in our lives and all around us. This is something that we struggle with because whereas the ego's motive, you can say, is good on one hand, it is to be happy, to find happiness, and to avoid pain. The problem is that the ego is all about what's happening outside of ourselves to be able to find that happiness. As we know, we've all been experiencing this. If I have the right number of friends, if I have the right amount of money, if I have the right position of power and influence and popularity in the world, I bet you I'm going to be happy. That's what the ego says. Does it work? We know that doesn't work. It does work for a while, though. It can work for up to 10 seconds. It can work for a little longer sometimes. But then that bubble pops because it's not the truth. It's not the reality. God has designed it so that when we have the wrong thought, the wrong attitude, or it's slightly deviated, he's going to let us know because it's going to feel uncomfortable. Something is not going to work with that kind of a thought and an attitude. And so it comes back to us as a mirror. The ego is like smoke and mirrors. You know, it comes back to us in life to say, that wasn't the right choice. You have not achieved your goal of being happy in a way that lasts. You have not achieved your goal of being free of the pain and the sorrow and the suffering. Because when the ego asserts itself, it will make the mistakes because it doesn't have higher understanding, higher knowledge. And so we are thrown into a challenge that will create the pain and the suffering along the way. Now, what are we trying to do with this ego? Are we, in fact, trying to destroy it? Do we want to totally eradicate it from our lives? Actually, we can't. The ego is a part of who we are. And the ego, actually, as Yogananda had said, the ego is the soul identified with the body. Now, that's a very interesting phrase. The ego is the soul identified with the body. It didn't say it's totally Maya. It's the soul. The soul that has perfection and a absolute oneness with God. But an aspect of that is clouded, especially when we're on this planet, Earth. Where Maya, where delusion, where the obstacles are very, very strong, where the battle has to be fought. to be able to work our way through that experience of our delusion, to find the truth, to see the truth. This is our play. This is our journey, the spiritual journey. We're on the spiritual journey, or we're on an ego trip. One way or another, it's a journey. So when we're on that spiritual journey, we have these choices. The ego is a part of us. Now, as I'm trying to understand that, there's a phrase in the poem Samadhi that really struck me. I'll read this to you, very brief. Samadhi but extends my conscious realm beyond the limits of the mortal frame to the farthest boundary of eternity, where I, the cosmic sea, watch the little ego floating in me. Very interesting. Where I, that cosmic sea, watch the little ego floating in me. The ego is not only just the identity, as we started with the ego, the identity of the soul identifying with the body, actually. It's actually a very deep state of consciousness that I do have. God has given us a separate identity, a way of being that is at once completely one with God, and at the same time, we have a memory of that separation. It's not that once there is liberation, from my understanding, it's not that we completely lose all of those memories. We have that memory that we were once separate, and that memory can be reimagined. The masters, the liberated masters, can return in their bodies. That memory is still there of that, that separation, that not a complete separation, that separate reality, that separate identity, but it's at the same time one with God. Very interesting play. Can we really understand that? No, not really, not at this point. Now, I speak for myself. As Yogananda said, you will know when you know God. What we need to do, though, is to figure out how do we get from the place where the ego seems to be the strongest aspect of our lives and controlling to the place where we can lift and transform that ego into a higher state of consciousness, where the ego can actually be the friend, because when it makes poor decisions based on what's outwardly possible to make us happy, and when those decisions are made and turn ugly, difficult, challenging, painful, there's another part of our being that finally says, I need to change. I've tried having all these relationships, all this money, all these powerful positions, and they do have a place in the world. Money's necessary. But when I'm so focused on them as the hope of the source of my happiness, it's going to create a pain until I shift and say, I don't think that's going to work anymore. I need to try something different, finally. And so the spiritual path begins, that seeking for that answer, for that solution. And it's a slow process at first, because the ego has an attachment. It has developed its habits and its roots in our consciousness. But realizing that all of those roots can be dissolved, all of that energy that's contained in the ego can be held and lifted and utilized in other ways. And it becomes joy. It becomes freedom. As on the spiritual path, we're starting to look inside for that source of happiness, that lasting happiness. And as we touch that, the blessing is that God comes and says, you got it right, kid. Here's a little joy for you. You got it right. Here's some wonderful family that I want you to be with. You got it right. Here's your guru. Here's your teacher. Here's your guide that will take that and helped you lift it. The grace comes 100% guaranteed. As soon as our thoughts shift away from that idea that the happiness is outside to that idea that the root of happiness is in the consciousness that we can hold inside, when we focus in our sadhana, meditation practices, when we study the teachings, when we serve other people instead of focusing so thoroughly on ourselves. It's about knowing. It's about deeper level of understanding. I'm most inspired by a phrase, a definition of Yogananda's, the definition for self-realization. And this is it. Self-realization is the knowing in all parts of body, mind, and soul that I am now in possession of the kingdom of God. That one doesn't need to ask for it. That God's omnipresence is our omnipresence. That all we need do is to improve our knowing. Well, all we need to do is to improve our knowing. This whole journey, this whole experience of lifetimes of seeking happiness, how ridiculous. When we have the omnipresence of God already there, when everything that is God is already within us. What that ego has done is to block us from that understanding, that realization. It already exists. All we have to do is to improve our knowing. And that improvement of knowing is really about love. All those other aspects of the journey that we take, all the different actions and the meditations and the service and the study, all very significant and important. It's about the heart. It's about connecting inside with that heart. And that in itself is a very, very, very powerful moment. And each time that we do that, I remember one time being with a little girl. I was in the U.S. Navy for a while, and back in the 70s, and I was a corpsman, a medic in the Navy, because I wanted to help. And one of my duties was to go to a camp or special place for children who had disabilities, just volunteer to help with them. And so one time I saw this little tiny girl. She was 4 years old. Mentally, she was more like about a year. Physically, about 2 or 3 years old. Very tiny, maybe 2 years old in the body. She had problems. I felt sorry for her. This beautiful little child who could drool, who could just sort of sit. But when she would sit with a smile. That's all she could do. She couldn't talk. She couldn't really relate. She could look in the eyes and she could smile. And I tried to humor her and to give her a little fun and happiness. And I remember I took her and put her in one hand and I held her up like this. And I was thinking, oh, this must be fun for her. And then she gave me a gift. I received a gift that changed my consciousness and that helped me to take one of my first steps on the spiritual path. Because as I was holding her, there was something in her that touched me. There was a communion between us. This little child drooling, she looked into my eyes and she smiled. And I felt her soul. I felt a being of love, of light, a real being. I remember thinking, I've got a whole being in my hand. That's not just a body, not just an undeveloped mind. This is a complete being, a soul who's charged with God, who loves God, who is full of light. And I remember coming out of that experience thinking, if she has that, do I? If she has that, do you? A Are we all the same? And my journey was really ignited by this experience, this gift from this little girl. It was a very, very important moment for me. Later, when I came to Ananda, and in fact, she was instrumental in that because I wasn't at Ananda at that point. I was looking for that answer inside. Who is the soul? What is that love that I experienced in her? How do you find that? How do you do that? And I developed a relationship, as we do, with the masters. And I remember feeling such a very deep connection with Yogananda. But I didn't know him yet. I hadn't really quite experienced that. And so I remember asking Yogananda, I didn't think of him as my guru yet. I said, Yogananda, would you be my best friend? That was the step that I could take. Would you be my best friend? And I felt the answer, yes. And it went on. And I developed that. How do you treat a best friend? You talk to them. You honor them. You serve. You help. I was trying to do that in my life. I was living at Ananda at that time. And I remember there was an experience that occurred where there was a group of us, and this was back in the 80s, and there was a group, something about our path, and there's an exploration of our understanding of that. And the leader, the group leader, an Ananda person, said, think of your best friend. Oh, I could do that. I have one. You know, Yogananda. So I pictured Yogananda very close. And then he said, imagine yourself saying goodbye to your best friend. That was a mistake for me. I said goodbye. When I said goodbye to Yogananda, it was the most painful experience I've ever had because he actually left. That experience in the heart that I had so worked so hard to develop, I had not realized how powerful it was, how much a part of me that experience of Yogananda had become. My definition of who I was thinking, well, this is Peter at that time, and I do these things. And well, it turned out when I said goodbye to my best friend, Yogananda, and that consciousness left me, I was in agony. I was empty. The heart was like, had just been shriveled compared to what it had been before. I cried for 3 days. I just cried and cried because it was so painful inside not to feel the presence of God. I had realized that all this time I was feeling the presence of God. And I was so much in pain that I had to plead, come back. I'm so sorry. I made a mistake. Please come back. I love you. I want to be with you. For 3 days I did this. It's almost like they say the 3 days of darkness. Well, I experienced part of that at least. But after 3 days, it came back. And I was able to feel, okay, that's the presence of God again. Thank you. Now I know there's that ego part of me, and that other part is just God. It's the presence of the divine that is in the heart, that is my heart, that flows through this heart. I can't take credit for that. But it has merged with me. And I can never, ever take it for granted. That relationship with God is not one of the ego. It's one of the soul. And it's a relationship that needs to be nurtured and gently held and comforted and to be able to continue to go deeper and deeper in that until we become one, until we attain self-realization. Self-realization is the knowing in all parts of body, mind, and soul that we are now in possession of the kingdom of God. That we don't have to ask that it come to us. That God's omnipresence is our omnipresence. That all we need to do is to improve our knowing. May God bless us all. in this journey. May we feel His presence guiding our actions. May our hearts always be open to receiving His love, to sharing that love with Him. May we all become liberated and free in these moments and in this life. Om Shanti Shanti.